Thanks again to our MS Red for us open the meeting and take this opportunity to welcome those that have joined us since we first started. And a huge welcome to any visitors with us tonight, and a massive welcome to any newcomers that might be in the room. People just coming back. We hope you're going to hear something that's going to encourage you to keep coming back. So we are a speaker meeting, and it falls on me tonight to introduce our speaker. I don't know where to start, really. This individual came to our meetings a number of years ago. One of the things I love about the service I do is the privilege I get to watch people come into the rooms and find what they're looking for, go through their journey. Sometimes it's a struggle, sometimes it isn't, and find their feet and kind of make a home for themselves in our meetings and become comfortable and be of service and start taking an active part. And this person's certainly done that. I have a huge amount of respect for their recovery, for what they've gone through. And it's been a privilege to be of service working with them. So without further ado, I'm going to introduce you to Ellie, who's going to share her experience, strength and hope with us for 40 or 45 minutes, whatever she's comfortable with, her journey into and through Narcotics Anonymous. And she did celebrate a clean time milestone fairly recently, so I'll leave it to her to share that if she chooses. And so Ellie, please, the floor is yours. Please share with us. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. Hi, everybody. I'm Ellie on the left.
Hi, Ellie.
Hi,
everybody. Hello.
Hi.
Oh. Hi, Ellie.
Hello. Grateful to be here. Thank you, Steve, for that lovely introduction. I guess I'll start, you know, my experience. I currently live in Italy, but I was born in 1950 in Brooklyn, New York, and I lived there until 1992. At that time, I moved to Northern Virginia with my job, and now I currently live in Italy. And when I was little, when I was, I come from a family of a lot of abuse, a lot of trauma. My mother was a secretary. My father worked in a coffee shop, and they met, and at that time, I only learned, you know, as an adult, that he was interested in another woman. So my mother was he was on the rebound. So he married my mother, and they were two completely opposite people, you know. And I'm not quite sure. I know my mother had a really rough life. She was an orphan. She was born in Canada, and she was an orphan, and her sisters raised her, and one in particular, her older sister, the eldest sister, was, from what I understand, very emotionally abusive to all the siblings that she raised. She was, I think, 17 or 18 at the time, and she took on like five of the siblings. The others went to orphanages, and not only that, my mother and her family were really, really pretty. My mother's sisters were pretty. The boys were good looking, but this particular sister was not. And I think she took a lot of her frustration out. Plus my mother's mother died when she was about two, maybe less than two. So, you know, my mother had a rough life and held a lot of resentment throughout entire life. I mean, from the time she was, you know, little to the time she died, she was filled with resentment. But anyway, so my parents got married and they had me, and then they had my sister, and their marriage wasn't very good. And they took their frustrations on me because I was, I guess I was the fighter, you know. I guess I was kind of kid that, you know, I believed in justice and fairness, and I would fight back, you know. I wasn't a bad kid, but I was kind of determined to get my way when I thought something was wrong. And my father was very, very physically abusive. So he would, beat me with belts. And later on, and when I would go to school, I would have, marks on my body and cover them. My mother never did anything to help. She never even checked to see if I was okay. She was physically abusive and verbally abusive. So that's how I started out in life. And as a result, I remember when I was about 3 and a half, maybe 4, I had my tonsils removed. They did that in those days. They brought you to a clinic and you had your tonsils removed. And I remember as early as a little child, I had ether. And I remember them putting a mask on me. And then the next thing I know, I woke up. And I remember not the surgery and not the sore throat that I had. I remember the feeling of being put under and waking up. And I thought that was amazing. And I liked it. And that was my first experience of, I consider that was the beginning of my addiction. Later on in life, I used when my parents eventually separated, and then they got back together. But when they were separated, my mother was having a really hard time, and I started taking overdoses of aspirin, thinking I'm not quite sure what I was thinking. I guess I was thinking I wanted the pain to go away. I was frightened, or I don't know if I wanted to die. I think I did at that young age, and I don't know where on earth I would have gotten that from. It certainly wasn't talked about on the radio or TV in those days. I just knew aspirin took away pain. As a result, it caused some problems with my stomach. Of course, my mother didn't know. I didn't never told her that I did it. And years later, went to school, and it was only many years later when I realized that I have no childhood memories. I blocked out most of my childhood, except for the abuse. I remember the abuse, not all of it, but I remember some of it. And I was also at around, my sister was a baby, so I was like 4 and a half, 5, maybe 4 years old. I was sexually abused by a man who used to cut my hair. So I remember at that point splitting. I don't know how to explain that other than part of me was standing there and part of me was somewhere else. And that began a process of what I have today, which is dissociative disorder and complex PTSD. And I somehow went to school. I somehow graduated. I somehow did homework. I went to an art high school. I somehow did my art projects. I have no memory of it. And that's a really weird thing to lose time and lose your memory. And I share that because there are times to this day I still use that coping tool. And that's what it is. It was a coping tool. It was a way to escape my feelings. And it became automatic, and it still can be automatic. So if I'm in a situation and I'm really frightened, I will go somewhere in my head and not remember. So later on, when I was older, I got married. I had a daughter when I was 28. The man, my ex-husband was a teacher. He's also a gambler and an alcoholic. And after my daughter was about 3, I left him. And I left him for a using addict. And mind you, I never, ever made any connection to drugs. I never thought that my using with him, my leaving my family, had anything to do with drugs. I thought it had to do with my mental health. I thought it had to do with me being a victim of, abuse. And My ex-husband and I had a joint custody agreement, and my daughter went back and forth. And so years later, I left the using addict and met it my former coworker, who he and I were friends at work. We started to date and got married, like, I don't know, 4 months later. And by the way, we're still together, and that was 1984. The reason I share that is that my ex-husband decided he was going to sue me for custody, full custody of my daughter. And my current husband thought that it would be best if, we were still seeing, we were seeing each other, that it'd be better if we were married. So we got married. And I was seeing a psychiatrist. I started seeing a psychiatrist when I was 20, 28, I think. It was before I got pregnant. And I was put on lots of psychotropic drugs, drugs for anxiety and drugs for depression and drugs for, you name it, this and that. And whenever the psychiatrist read about in his in the medical journals, he would put me on it. So I was on everything from Thorazine to Valium to drugs for epilepsy, combinations of drugs. And I got, I would abuse them whenever anything went, any time I was triggered by a feeling of, anytime I was triggered by something, I would want to sleep. And those pills that I was given, I would sleep. And I would use them for sleep, and I would use them to overdose, and I would use them to try to commit suicide, to be honest with you. And so that was when my daughter was three. I lost custody of her. My ex-husband sued me for custody. I meant to tell you that when I got involved with that using addict, and he and I used together. I forgot to mention that too. We smoked a lot of pot. That was it, mostly for me. I know he did other drugs, but we were always high. And then it didn't occur to me till much later on, until I got clean, that it wasn't him that I left my husband for. It was for the drugs. And but anyway, so I remarried. I remarried my current husband, and we tried to make a family. My daughter went back and forth between my ex-husband and myself, and it was complicated. It was difficult, and it wasn't that she was the easiest kid, but she was hurt. She was my ex-husband remarried. His wife didn't wanted to punish me. She wanted me out of their lives, and so my daughter was used as a pawn between us, and it was really hard. And she acted out quite a bit, and it was chaotic. My life was chaotic. It was chaotic since I was a child, and it became chaotic as an adult. And it became even more chaotic leading up to the time that I found Narcotics Anonymous, and that was in 2002. I attempted suicide. It didn't work. And the next day, I didn't even know there was such a thing as Narcotics Anonymous. I only knew about the other fellowship, and I thought there has to be something for drugs. There has to be something that, some place that I could go to. And I found Narcotics Anonymous. I went to my first meeting, and I heard somebody in the meeting talk about isolation, and I was absolutely thrilled that somebody shared that, because I felt isolated all my life. I worked all my life. I worked from the time I supported myself from the time I was 19, 18, 19. I had my first apartment. I had a car. I had a house, And from outwardly, I looked completely okay, completely never know, but sorry, my daughter's trying to call me. That's a whole other story. But I have, see, this is what happens. I dissociate when I get frustrated, I get a little spaced out. Anyway, so I have to think back where I was. It's so embarrassing. And maybe I'll just share where I'm at now, because it would be easier. It's hard to share, for me, it's really hard to share a lifetime of trauma and a lifetime of chaos without getting confused. There's so much that had happened in my life, so much insanity, that it's easier for me to share where I'm at. And where I'm at now is, when I moved to Italy, I had got clean in like I said, March 2002, and I relapsed when I came to Italy. So imagine there was all this chaos, and my life actually blew apart a couple of years before that. I really won't go into that story. It's very traumatic, and there's only a few people, including my sponsor, that knows what happened. But it was a disaster, and I moved to Italy, and no meetings, no English-speaking meetings anyway, and no sponsor. I had no connection with my NA family. I didn't want to talk to them. I didn't think of calling them. Of course, there were no online meetings, and I chose to pick up. And the next morning when I woke up, and it was this Christmas Eve when I picked up, and in the morning, I had this thought. It came to me, it was type in Google Skype NA. And I did, we were on Skype at that time. And I found the meetings in Australia and the meetings. And from there, I think it was either Jay or Steve that told me about this meeting, about HIGNA. And so I had been coming to online meetings for 5 years. And they are the best thing that ever happened to me. Yes, I worked steps. I went to, when I first came into Narcotics Anonymous, I was one of the oldest people there. But I worked steps. I had sponsors. I had sponsees. I did whatever was told, what I was told to do. I followed direction. I had, was of service. I had many service commitments. And I was moving along, but the biggest problem I had was with a higher power. I couldn't, as much as I wanted to connect with a higher power, I didn't trust. I didn't believe in something that I couldn't see, even though people would say to me, you know what, you can use my higher power. I had such a hard time. I couldn't trust people. How could I trust something I couldn't see? And not only that, I didn't see the incredible things that were happening in my life, the good things. I was only focused on the negativity. And it's kind of hard, you know, when you say you're grateful, you act as if, and you see everybody around you is doing well, and you're not. That's how I felt. And I was, but I kept coming back because I was afraid not to. I was afraid I would, something terrible would happen to me if I left Narcotics Anonymous. And yet I did, you know, for a short time. I went to the other fellowship when I moved to Italy. I forgot to mention that. I didn't fit in. I went to one meeting a week. I had a head full of NA. You know, I didn't have a drug problem. Yes, I did. I was addicted to psychiatric drugs that my doctors gave me. But I also... I had a living problem. I had an LE problem. I had mental health issues. I had, I'm an addict in recovery. Well, you know, I wasn't at that point when I relapsed, but I felt I was at my lowest point. What had happened was I didn't have meetings, like I said, I had an accident. I got hurt. I hurt my rib cage and I couldn't breathe. And I was on a combination of medications that were given to me by the doctors here. And I was using them as prescribed, but I became allergic to one of them. And unfortunately, I had to come off of it like right away. It was a psychiatric medication. So my brains were kind of scrambled. And then my daughter estranged me. My daughter's an adult. She lives in the States. I have two grandchildren. And she stopped talking to me. And for me, that was probably the most devastating thing. I had a friend who became friends with my daughter. She was friendly with her. She would send me pictures. But my daughter wanted nothing to do with me. And this woman kept seeing my daughter. One of my character defects is jealousy. And that was a big trigger for me. And I picked up. Well, fast forward 6 years, 5 years. Well, it was 6 years ago that it happened when my daughter stopped talking to me, but I picked up a year later. And where I'm at now is my daughter and I are connected again. It took such a long time. I used to cry at meetings. I used to think I'm never going to see her again. She'll never talk to me again. She is one of us. She goes to meetings as well. What she needed was space for me. What she needed was, she had a lot of resentments about what had happened when we lived in Virginia. And no matter what I did, nothing worked. My sponsor put me on step one three times, not about the drugs. After I did the first step about drugs, the next three times was about my daughter, the unmanageability. And I had to sit and wait and wait and wait. And I see everybody around me getting well, and I'm still not getting well. And the thing is, I continued with service. I knew that having a service commitment, I would keep showing up. I went to meetings every day, sometimes twice a day, sometimes three times a day. I have a sponsor now. I write my steps. I'm not consistent in them, but I write my steps. I read the literature. I have a sponsee now, not like I did when I lived in the States. I had a lot of sponsees, but I have a sponsee now. I mentor some people, even though I'm not their sponsor. I help others that are actually close enough to be old enough to be my daughter, which is very cool. I learned a lot from them. I learn a lot from people in meetings. I listen to what people share. I try to apply that to my own life. I try to having trust in a power greater than myself, in something I can't see. But I do have it now. I do see that. I do know I have a loving higher power because I can feel that now. And I pray every day. I journal. I meditate. And all of these things have helped me. As far as my mental health, I do see a psychiatrist. We have been working on the situation that I have, this dissociative disorder. It looks like it's never going to go away, as for what she says. It's probably going to be with me forever. It is difficult. It is tricky. You've heard me do it tonight, where I completely lose my train of thought. I kind of fly. It's almost like I'm flying up to the ceiling. That's what it feels like. I'm not grounded, and meditation does help. And many times I'm scattered, I'm all over the place. And this is how I have to live my life. I get to live my life. My reconciliation with my daughter was the best gift that could ever have been given to me. Really, the best thing that could have ever happened to me. I love my family. I really love my family. I regret that I left my husband, my first husband. I regret it, but I wasn't happy with him. He was abusive. And I felt like I somehow believed he would be okay, you know, like we would share the responsibility of my daughter. And it didn't work out that way. In retrospect, I would never have done it. If I was in recovery, I never would have done that. I would have done things so differently. I've learned how to manage my life in a way I never, even therapy hasn't done that for me. I'm extremely grateful for Narcotics Anonymous. I'm extremely grateful for online meetings, especially because of COVID, but because guys have saved my life. You really are like my family. I love you all. And especially this meeting, these people in this meeting, I feel like they're my family, brothers and sisters. And I know I'm just, I don't know, I'm just so grateful. So I'm sorry I got all confused. It does happen to me. You know, what can I say? I do my best. I love you all, and I'll share the time.